Welcome to the Winnebago Gang Podcast, episode 215. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Graham's going to like that surf guitar.
I know.
Oh, baby.
Graham
that gets
Pickens.
Me going.
Yeah. How you doing?
Doing great.
And our buddy Phil is off. He's got lots of stuff going on, family stuff and so on. So he had to beg off today. But anyway, so lots going on this past week. Graham, you and I were at MHTA, and what'd you think? Because I'll tell you what I think.
Well, you know, it had its highlights, but it definitely was not what it's been in the past. Not as big. Darn near half as many people.
And
you didn't hang around till the end. The most disappointing thing was it just ended. No reception.
Oh, you're
no
kidding.
Opportunity to, you know, schmooze at the end there. It's just like, okay, bye, go home now.
Interesting.
So that was kind of strange. But there, you know, it was worth going just to hear Scott Derschlag, the senior VP of digital and marketing at Best Buy, give his long, drawn-out description of what they're doing. That was surely worth going, didn't you think, Steve?
Yeah, I did. And unfortunately, I got up to ask a question, as you probably saw. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he ran out of time. But the question was around, he didn't mention privacy, and he didn't mention security at all. So what I thought about when he was talking was, part of what they want to do is, when you walk into the store, is to have your phone give them a heads up that you're there. That you potentially could put down all your interests, and they would know when you walked in the store, and they could assign a blue shirt to you that would know what you want. And I mm-hmm. thought, boy, has that got some privacy implications.
It surely does. Yeah. But you're right. His new Web 3.0 platform, site, whatever you want to call it, is very much about personalization. He said
exactly.
That right up front. I wonder if he would have really had an answer for you, though. He kind of danced around stuff. I mean, the guy's he's obviously good on stage and is kind of a politician.
Yeah.
He didn't answer my questions really either, except he rambled on and on and on about how it's not going to be a big bang introduction. That it's going to be basically, you know, just iterations. The site will just be iterated here and there and everywhere, and you won't really even notice that it's a new site.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and that's all well and good, I guess. But my question was really more about what kind of resources are they putting behind this? And I was curious, you know, how much of it is being outsourced, and I'm convinced that the vast portion of it is being outsourced, but of course he didn't probably want to identify who they've outsourced it to.
Right.
But
probably not Amazon.
No, but you know, Sapient or somebody like that. Who knows, you know, but,
yeah.
But he also, of course, wouldn't say anything about how much money they're spending on it, which I was hoping he might dribble out. But I've seen Jolie make reference to the investment they're making going forward and how a big part of that would be for online. And I had a fascinating discussion at the end of the day with someone that knows a lot more about what's going on over there than I do. And the person sort of challenged me, said, well, what do you think it is? What kind of an investment do you think they're making? And I go, I don't know, 50 million. And he looked at me and he said, that's low.
Well,
so, you know, I'm thinking, you know, over what period of time is the question. But, you know, this is going to be didn't Scott say a 2 or 3 year process before?
Yep. In an answer to your question, I think he alluded to that it would be several years.
It sounds super creepy, though. You know, the Google Now, which we'll talk about later in the show, works only because you know it's done by some algorithm on some computer system. It doesn't involve real people, you know?
Right.
So, you know, having you walk into a Best Buy, hey, Steve, I hear you're here to, you know, look at TVs today. It seems like you know too much about me.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think people are going to like that.
Well, especially if it extends into other you know, like they start carrying underwear. Tim, welcome. I see you like to wear boxers.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Boxers with chips built in, Yeah. They're entering a whole new world, but a little takeaway that I have from where they're sitting, you know, and he bragged about how they just became one of the top 10 online internet retailers. They're number 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have expected they were maybe in that group already, but they really, as a percentage of their total, have a very small part compared to some of their contemporaries, a small percentage of their business is online. Aren't their total sales north of $50 billion now? And online, we figure is, you know, I don't know, maybe $3.5 billion, $4 billion, you know, even if it's $5 billion. It's 1/10 of their total,
right?
But other brick and mortar retailers, in other categories anyway, are way ahead of that. And even companies like Office Max, Office Depot, those kind of folks are, you know, have much more of their online business. So that is a huge challenge for them. And we talked myself and some others about how, you know, digital products is really where, you know, that is probably going to have to increase substantially, as well as the physical products.
Well, you know what I've always been amazed by, and I, when I think about the investment that they're going to make, it's about where things are going, not where they are now. Mm-hmm. And, I have to tell you that the recommendation engine that Amazon has built is wonderful, because I'll go in and look at, like, I'm looking for a new camera now. And I love going in and looking at different products that other people have purchased around that camera, and mm-hmm. then read reviews by them.
Yep.
And, you know, it's stuff like that, you know, you let the crowd make the recommendations for you. And
right.
It works pretty well.
It's funny you'd bring up the Amazon recommendation engine, which was really developed around technology that came out of Net Perceptions and the University of Minnesota back in the 90s. I don't want to cover this event, but on Thursday, Steven Snyder, who was the CEO of Net Perceptions, spoke about his new book at the Club Entrepreneur event. So I was chatting with him, and we were going back down memory lane, or you know, in his introduction that we talked about that whole recommendation engine thing.
I mean, so, when you were kids back in the 80s?
Yeah, it's when we were kids back youngsters. In the 90s. But yeah, but that technology is still out there, and you know, you'd think BestBuy.com had been taking advantage of that a long time ago.
Yeah,
but they'll need it even more so going forward, I think.
Well, the thing that stunned me was I've seen other tech journalists say that there was over 1,000 people there, and I actually did a count.
Oh, there was nowhere near that
many.
Nowhere
near that many. I would say that it was probably very generously between 500 and 600, and that's including all the vendors.
Did they say the reason for the drop in attendance?
No, but
not a word.
They didn't say boo. But also, you know, it's when I look at why I go to conferences and the ones that I choose to go to, it's about what I'm going to learn. It's about you know what's over the top of the hill, what's coming next, you know, what sorts of things should I be thinking about, not what's here right now, or, you know, in their case, they have a lot of emphasis on STEM education, which is wonderful. But at the end of the day, that's why we have a Department of Education, and we have a lot of educators that are working on that. And it's not going to have a payback for, you know, a decade or more. And but I'll just give you a quick there were three things that happened that I thought were pretty interesting. Is one, I walked by the Cybersecurity Summit booth, and I did not know that we had had two other cybersecurity summits here in Minnesota. And it really looks interesting in terms of the attendees and who's coming there and so forth. Looks like a really great event. It'll happen in October of 2013. And I did talk to a young woman who's actually on the content committee. And I said, hey, you know what would be really great? Because the new NSA data center in Utah is going online in September, could you get somebody from the NSA to come in and talk about it? And she kind of laughed, said, yeah, that's probably not going to happen. But then there was also, have you guys heard of Red Wing Ignite?
You mean the Ignite event?
Well, so they actually have a co-working facility in Red Wing.
Oh, that's the name of it.
And they have, yep, they call it Red Wing Ignite. And it's, I talked to these guys. I'm going to go down there and have a tour here in the next few weeks. Huh. And they've raised an equity fund already. They've got this workspace. They have mentors. And then most importantly, one of their main bullet points is scenic hiking and biking trails within walking distance. But they have a national partnership with US Ignite and the Mozilla Foundation, and they've got gigabit Ethernet in the building.
Huh.
So pretty interesting.
Is it primarily a incubator. Is it an economic development fund? Is it the city of Red Wing that's put some money into it, or did you get the feeling it was private investors?
That it was private.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Definitely have checked that out.
I want to go down and find out more. And then the third one is, you guys remember the front door to the university was run by a guy named Dick Summerstead for a long time?
Oh, yeah.
And there's a woman now named Elaine Nissen, who's the, she calls herself the concierge of the Office of Business Relations at the U of M. And they're really moving forward on educational outreach and doing seminars and workshops and so on for businesses. And I really encouraged them to, you know, pull together some sort of event where people can wander around and look at available technologies. And you know, that will, rather than say, here we have this particular technology we've patented, now we are going to go find the businesses that this will match or that could take advantage of this, but rather, you know, open it up to others that might be able to move forward on it. So anyway, it was a real interesting discussion.
Is she, is this a new position that she just took on, or is it, or as you imply, is it really just sort of a continuation of what would
the latter? Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. So, but did you go to SMB, the social media breakfast yesterday, Graham?
Yes, I did.
And Paul DeBettings was the guy, right?
Yep. He was doing his talk on LinkedIn and covering a lot of the new features, which was interesting. And it had a lot of folks in the audience, I think, who are, you know, maybe younger, maybe looking to break into the workforce, some college students, but a whole mix of folks. I'd say it drew probably, you know, 150 people or so at the studio, 514 Studios. And we had a bunch of our old guys that have been part of the organization for a long time, kind of congregating in the back, you know, because we've all heard Paul speak before, so we were having sort of old home week during the discussion. Apologies to Paul, we weren't listening to his entire presentation, but we were trying to. But Rick Mann showed up, our illustrious founder.
Yeah,
and
I haven't seen him for a while.
And Doug Poli, who I hadn't seen for a long time, who's VP of Strategy and Partnerships for VirtuCore, which is a big cloud infrastructure player. And he lives here, but is on the road a lot. And who else? Well, Lonnie Golden was there, and Lee Auden showed up, and so it was a fun event to kind of, as the snow was falling outside, and Number 55 in a string, in an unbroken string, I guess, of monthly meetings. Pretty doggone impressive.
So. Good for them. And then you went to the Sabaco event and the Google Happy Hour.
Yeah, I had three events yesterday spanning a 12-hour period. You know, I didn't wrap it up till about 8 o'clock at night.
But you're just a little social butterfly.
Oh my God. Well, luckily, they weren't all back-to-back. I had a breather in between. But yeah, the U of M Carlson School Sobacco event, which stands for social something or other. I can never remember what the acronym stands for, but one of the professors there has the Sobacco program, which is going to lead to a master's degree in social analytics.
Oh, social basically. Media and business analytics collaborative.
There you go. Yeah, and there's a master's program that'll be coming by fall of 2014, they think. Wow. And he's got this speaker series where he brings in visiting professors from all over. And there was a guy from Carnegie Mellon yesterday, but oh man, was it propeller head time. I mean, you had to be a serious statistics geek to even understand most of what this guy was talking about. So all I know is he did a study about social learning amongst taxi drivers. And I didn't hear him say what city, but he literally did an analytics study of traffic patterns and how taxi drivers make decisions of what routes they're going to take. And so it was pretty heavy stuff. But then I had to move on to the Google Happy Hour at Coco, which was basically a big kegger is what it was.
Huh.
It was a Fulton beer kegger. No, it was the Google for Entrepreneurs. Folks were in town again. As you recall, they announced a partnership with Coco a few months back, which I wrote about. And or was it only a couple months ago? Anyway, they're back already doing a program this morning relating to a nonprofit group that at Coco that Google is supporting to help train high school students in the ways of entrepreneurship is basically what it's about. And that's going on this morning or maybe all day at Coco. But last night it was Mary Grove, who's head of the Google for Entrepreneurs program, mm-hmm. and her husband, who's actually a Minnesotan, and her husband works in Google Plus. He might be the Google Plus product manager. I know he's one of the main dudes.
And he lives here or they came in?
No, he doesn't live here, but he's from here originally. Oh. But they came back here to do this program last night and today. And but he gave a talk on the latest stuff with Google Plus. And it's basically about Google Plus sign-in was the main thing he talked about. And then he was talking about a lot of stuff related to Android, and I kind of zoned out on that, but I couldn't hear very well. The acoustics in there aren't the greatest.
Yeah.
When somebody's up at a screen doing a PowerPoint, and we were about two beers into it by then anyway. But there were at least a couple hundred people there, and a lot of good networking. And
wait a second, Tim, are you noticing a pattern here?
Yeah, a lot of beer.
A lot of beer.
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, there was beer. There was beer flowing at this thing. That basically all it was. Well, there were some minimal hors d'oeuvres and things, but the first of a string of events that will be happening and events and programs through this cooperative effort between Coco and Google for Entrepreneurs. So we'll be seeing more of that.
Great.
Yeah.
Good, good, good. So this has actually been getting a lot of buzz. The Spark devices, Spark Core. Mm-hmm. Now, who did the post on Minovate?
I did.
I got the early
jump on that one, and they probably had a bunch of other sites write about it too. But yeah, I posted right as their Kickstarter went live.
Excellent. Well, yeah. I'm glad you put something in here about the Internet of Things, because this is a space that I've been following extremely closely, and one that I think Tim O'Reilly is going to try to rename the industrial internet. That's their direction with it.
Please, Tim. Yeah, we could have a much better name than that.
I know. But the point is that this whole space is really going to explode. And, you know, my gut tells me, and I wish I would have predicted this in our prediction show in December, but I think Apple's going to get into the home automation space. I think they're going to get into it in a big way. I mean, they wouldn't have put the Nest thermostat in the store without it. And then when you think about what happens with AirPlay and Apple TVs and so on, I mean, they're clearly going to get into the space, in my view.
Well, the team who founded Nest, you know, are ex-Apple, so you know that they're close to the company.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, a little bit about SparkCore, which is the name of the Kickstarter project that Spark Devices did. It's Wi-Fi for everything. It's basically a Wi-Fi module that enables you to get a Wi-Fi into your product much easier and much less expensively than it is now. So their hope is to not just sell this product and get launched, but to become a resource for OEMs, for manufacturers of all kinds that need to get into this world. I mean, think of the thousands of companies out there that could be disrupted by a Nest thermostat. You know, Honeywell, I'm looking at you. Not that they're worried, but well, yeah, they probably are worried. They should be. They better be. But the companies are going to get disrupted by the Pebble watches or the Fitbits or all the new technology coming on stream that's going to upset their proprietary products. So the Internet of Things, 20 billion connected devices by I don't know, 4 or 5 years out, it can't be denied that it's a big space, and these guys think they have a way to get in early and become a force as a platform. By the way, they just real quickly, they are just exiting an accelerator program in China, the founders of Spark Devices, and it's called Hackcelerator. And their demo day is coming up May 13th, I think in the Bay Area, where most of the investors are. And I'm thinking these guys are going to get quite a nice reception from the investor community once they hit that demo day. They set their goal really low on the SparkCore Kickstarter at only $10,000.
Them why they did that? Their other Kickstarter didn't go so well? Or?
Well, they learned a lesson. Yeah, I think it's fair to say they set that goal at $250,000 and only got to about $125,000. So they got zilch on the light bulb thing.
Right. And so now they're at $114,000 with 28 days to go.
Right. They've
done 10x. They may get their 250 at the end,
They once you go past your goal, you get everything, minus the 10%, which you pay out to 5% to Kickstarter and about 4 or 5% to Amazon for the payments piece, I guess. So very smart move, but they blew by the 10 grand like almost instantly. And they were, maybe a half an hour. I think 3 or 4 hours later, they were, 3x that. They were into 30,000. So yeah, they're doing quite well. And they know they learned a lot of lessons about how to promote on Kickstarter.
Huh. Well,
it looks like an interesting project.
It really does. It really does.
Well, and the cloud piece that's coming, the cloud service, they've got their head screwed on straight, and I think they're going to do very, very well.
I think I'm going to make a Twitter fridge magnet.
There you go.
Have you seen that as one of their projects?
Yeah.
The little 9-volt battery off to the side, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, if I could figure out how to program an Arduino to cut my lawn, that would be awesome.
Yeah, they're going after that Arduino community for sure, and I know they'll get a lot of support from that community. So yeah, we're looking forward to having all those guys back from China after the 13th sometime. They're going to the Maker Faire in the Bay Area, so they'll get a lot of buzz out of that. That's coming up, I think, around the 20th of May or something like that. It's linked in my post.
Yeah.
And then I hope to get them out to the Glue Conference. Speaking of the developer community, they'll get a huge positive reaction there. That's May 21st to 23rd in Denver, where I'll be. So they might be joining me and some other Minnesotans out there. So yeah, that was a big piece of startup news this week.
Well, Tim, Best Buy, you're going to have to maybe stop calling it the Death Watch, because they're starting to do some interesting stuff, and one of them is what in terms of Europe.
They announced that they were pulling out of Europe. They're selling the joint venture that they had with Carphone Warehouse over there to basically consolidate back. So they got $700 million or so for that 50% stake.
And what did they pay? Do you know?
I don't know. $2.1 billion.
That's what they invested.
Yep.
Wow.
So it's another classic Best Buy acquisition that just bombed horribly.
Oh, I mean, well, it's not an acquisition.
From that respect, it
was a joint venture, because Carphone Warehouse on the ground in Europe is, you know, kind of like the Best Buy of Europe.
Yeah. It wasn't an acquisition. You're right.
Right. So they thought they could accelerate that faster by, you know, coming together, and they did. They have 2,400 stores. So it's only been a couple of years that they did this joint venture. So it made sense at the time. It doesn't make sense right now. So I think it's good that they got out of the business. There's a Strib piece, the second one, that's interesting because it kind of points out that they're going to, they learn a lot from these joint ventures. They learn, especially with this Carphone Warehouse one, how to do mobile. That was kind of their key learning.
Yeah.
Now that they're pulling out of these things, they're going to have to rely on internal talent, and there's question whether or not they've got the talent to pull it off. So
do you think that their mobile strategy was in the US, the small stores, was driven by that learning?
Absolutely.
The Best Buy mobile stores are basically Carphone Warehouse stores. Because if you go to, say, London, you'll see a Carphone Warehouse, next to the Starbucks on the corner. Just about every corner. And you can go in there, and they sell a wide variety of SIM cards. So they've over there, there's like a dozen different providers. So they have 12 different providers of SIM cards, and of course phones that go with all those, and other mobile stuff. And they're all small stores. So, I think they learned a lot that they can leverage here as they move into smaller stores.
And that new mobile strategy brought them something like 30% of their profits or something. So they did benefit from that tie up with Carphone Warehouse. There's no question. So, losing the money in the investment is one thing, but they got a lot of that back from the strategy that came out of it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that they could do now here is they could partner with T-Mobile closer, but I think that unfortunately they can't because of their agreements with AT&T and Verizon, which prevents them from really doing anything with T-Mobile in stores except sell prepaid stuff. And the reason that I think that is that T-Mobile is going away from the subsidy model. So, Best Buy could sell a lot of unlocked GSM phones for that network and push a lot of contracts. So, could be an opportunity for them. So hopefully they can rejigger their contracts with the other guys that are currently blocking T-Mobile.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. Yep.
Yeah, I went in there looking to upgrade one time, and that's what I was told on the floor. It was like, I said, can I do a T-Mobile upgrade? And they said, no, you can only do it on our website. Can't do it in the store. So
weird.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well,
yeah.
I got to jump over this because we got to talk for a minute about this Jamstick.
Yeah.
Which is on Indiegogo. I had no knowledge of this whatsoever. And I realize the reason is you probably have an RSS feed of stuff that's happening in technology and in the Twin Cities, right? Is that how you found out about it?
I saw it on Twitter, actually.
Oh, okay.
And you know, I thought, wow, this is a really cool idea. And then I found out it's local.
Yeah. I'm
like, well, we got to talk about it now. And they've this went up on Indiegogo in the past week, and they've already got $120,000.
And they have $100,000 goal. So
yeah,
the market has spoken.
And what's really cool is this is like a small guitar that, you know, interfaces with your iOS device, your iPad. So, I mean, for people like Graham, who's got an iPad and a passion for playing guitar, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Ukulele, maybe.
And it's only $200.
Wow. Huh. Wow.
It's sold out. Okay. Now it's $219 now.
Okay. But you know what? This is fabulous because the thing is about, what do you think, 2 feet long?
Yeah, it's
and,
small.
And shows a young woman holding it in front of an iPad. This is, this kind of thing is really, I think, fabulous, especially when you look at the arts programs in schools and how they've just plummeted, you know, both music and art. And now that districts are buying iPads or buying tablets instead of laptops, and they're doing one-to-ones or they're doing labs, you know, I could see them buying a bunch of these as well.
Yeah.
So that, at least you can add some arts education into the usage of these things.
Yeah, it makes it fun too.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a lot, cool. Lot better than a Tonette.
What's a Tonette? I don't even
remember the Tonettes. You don't remember the Tonettes?
We didn't have those here. That was a California. Where'd you grow up?
In California.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
we had we had the flutophone here in Minnesota.
So in the '60s, you know, we had, you could in the elementary schools, you could play any number of instruments, right? And so if you were one of the kids that didn't want to play the violin or the trumpet or whatever, you got a Tonette, which is like a very small plastic flute, and that's what you learned your notes on. So I was a Tonette guy.
Yep. Well, we had something similar, but it was called a flutophone.
Oh, okay. And, same idea.
Same idea. Yeah. Just a cheap way to get kids into music. Yep. So
didn't work in my.
Yeah.
In my case, didn't work, but you know.
So Google Now's out for iOS. I downloaded it. I like it. But I am also having battery issues.
Really?
I read about this and thought, well, wait a minute. If location services are on, it's always looking and it's dropping the battery down pretty dramatically. But I'm not sure if it's that or if it's this app called Moves, which is an app that tracks your steps. It's like a Fitbit app.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, well, Google is claiming that
there is no
set
issue.
It up in such a way that there should be no big issue with battery.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know if they know what the battery implications of Now on iOS is. You know, they definitely know what it is on Android, and they've optimized it in Jelly Bean. So it'll be interesting to see if it is a problem on iOS how they solve it, because they don't have direct access to the operating system.
Right.
Sure.
They do with Android.
Right. Yeah.
So they could always just call up the Android guys and say, hey, we need to tweak this and that. And when Google Now first came out on Android, it did run your battery pretty well.
Did it? Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. But now it's acceptable and it works really well. What's great about it though, is it anticipates the kinds of things that you know, that you'll need. So it watches your Gmail, and if you have, you know, reservations or, you know, your calendar for meetings, it will actually remind you that, say, hey, you've got a meeting coming up in, you know, an hour and a half, and you better get started in, you know, 15 minutes on the way, because it looks at where you are and the meeting and all the traffic information, and it computes the amount of time it'll take to get there.
And you don't think that's creepy?
Well, no, because it's a machine thing. I mean, yeah. it saved my bacon more than once, where I get a, you know, I hadn't put a alarm on a meeting, and I'll get a, you know, it'll pop up and I'll look at it and it'll say, you better leave. I'll go, I better leave.
Yeah.
So,
Well, Julio sure did a great post yep. on Google Now for the iPhone. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, did you see the post he did this week on us?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he did a post where it's on his same blog, the tech blog, where he mentioned that we had mentioned his piece on the dog story.
Pet chats.
And it's a little blog post. We'll take the shout out, Julio.
Yeah, you know, sure. Anybody that listens to this, you got to follow Julio's blog because he's on top of everything. It's just like, and as soon as something happens, he's like, I'm going to try this out. And away he goes.
You know, Apple better announce something soon so we can have him back on the show to talk about it.
Yeah.
we can have him anyway.
Will he go out to WWDC this year, I wonder?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't think he's ever gone.
To that? No, probably not. You can't really get press passes to that.
Because you have to sign non-disclosures. And most press won't do that.
No, they don't let press into that, and they don't have room for press.
Right.
He goes to the big announcements as a Pioneer Press journalist.
Yeah.
But he's great.
Well, so Graham, you sent this piece around earlier in the week about Apple, since we mentioned the stock on the last show.
Some good
stuff. I mean,
This guy at Forbes, Eric Jackson, really nailed it, explaining how, you know, the stock price gets, you know, jacked around with all these competing voices shouting at each other, you know, basically the shorts versus the longs, and how, you know, the whole Twitter phenomenon has really just exaggerated the extremes that happen in the media. But, you know, so that link, which will be in the show notes, that Forbes piece that he wrote, really, I think, nails what's been going on to a T. But, you know, the most interesting tweet I saw all week was this guy who tweeted at Gruber and M.G. Siegler, and he said, funny, Apple is up roughly $75 or roughly 17% in the last 2 weeks, and I don't see any flash headlines out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So now that it's, you know, basically roaring back, you know, the media is generally kind of silent about it. I mean, the media's just been jumping, you know, they love to jump on anything negative, but when it turns positive, nothing there.
Well, so here's what I find interesting is Business Insider, whose sister publication, Silicon Alley Insider, go back and forth. You know, one of the founders is Henry Blodgett.
Right.
The shamed analyst. Yes, disgraced analyst. But Business Insider is very anti-Apple, very negative, and Silicon Alley Insider is very pro Apple, and yet they will still do link baiting with respect to, you know, the sky's falling, and it's just so funny, though, because honestly it's Android's number one, iPhone's number one, you know, Samsung is this, and but people actually use the iPhone, you know. It's like, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I'm sure they plan it that way. They, you know, they're covering both sides of the coin. I mean, you know, all they want is page views. They're page view whores, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, I put in that Horace Dedieu interview just because there's some really good quotes in there. If you read it, my rule of thumb is that investors should expect a 40% drop in Apple shares at any time and for no reason.
Yes.
he sort of builds that into his view. Like, that's funny. 40%, big deal.
Yeah.
And then the other one is, anyone suggesting Tim Cook should be fired as a neophyte?
So
he kind of nails it.
Yeah, he does. He's a very well-spoken guy. Is he like based in the UK, that guy, or what?
No, he was based in Finland because he worked for Nokia.
But he
lives in California. I think he lives in the Los Angeles area now.
I thought he still was overseas. Okay.
Oh no.
Okay.
No, but he travels all the time. So
the link is from an event that happened over in the UK, I think. isn't it? Wasn't he at a TNW event or something? Or
I think it was in Australia, actually, but he's going to speak at an event in the UK later this month.
Yeah, it's called Thinking Digital or something, the UK's answer to TED. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, the one sad thing is when I'm on the treadmill, I can flip on my Apple TV and I watch, what I do is I'll, especially on YouTube, is I'll put things into my watch later list. And then when I go down the treadmill, I'll watch these later. I'll start watching the ones on my list. And there are so many conferences now that are posting, a week, maybe 2 weeks after the conference. And I realize every day I probably have 2 or 3 hours worth of lectures or talks that I'd love to watch, but I don't have any, unfortunately I have to sleep.
Yeah. So. Well, and unfortunately for me, there's no way I spend 2 or 3 hours on the treadmill.
if I can do
a half an hour, I'm feeling good.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So who put the Google Glass review on here?
I did, because we talked about Google Glass last week, and I thought it was interesting that Engadget put a full review of the Explorer Edition, which of course is the one that's going out to developers right now.
Yeah.
And, overall, they think it's innovative and interesting, but, it's just for developers or people that have $1,500 to burn.
Right. Well,
there's a lot of problems, with it. Not the least of which is battery life is bad. Apparently,
An hour of video would probably drain the battery, right?
Yeah. No, they said they couldn't get through it. They get through barely half a day on a charge, so you'll need to charge it throughout the day to get good usage out of it.
Well, either that, or I'm sure you've seen what's been happening with material science, with graphene and some other materials that use the body's movement to generate electricity and I'm sure it's just all static electricity or somehow it's movement based, and you can charge stuff. So it'll be, you have to wear your Google glasses and your special Google Glass jacket in order to, or your little tennis shoe thing, then have a wire running up to your glasses so you can,
or you could wear this solar powered thing that I got, this Waka Waka power thing, and clip it on your belt and
wear a little hat, a solar hat. You have to have a hat on all the time.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Oh, God. Well, whatever it is, Scoble will be in the shower with it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, please spare me.
Bad idea.
Does this guy have no shame?
Scoble wearing his Google Glass in the shower. Well,
there's a story someplace that I read this week that kind of compared the early chat or the early buzz about Google Glass to the Segway, where everyone was saying the Segway was going to be this great thing, and it came out and it worked as advertised, but it makes you look so dorky that it's only being used in very narrow applications. Mm-hmm. So that could be the same kind of thing here, and only time will tell.
Well, it's like anything else though. It's until you get it and until you live with it for a while, you can't really make a judgment. That's why, I see all these people talking about Google Glass and it's this and it's that and it's not this and it's going to impact privacy and yada, yada, yada. And it's not even out yet. And these people haven't even tried it. So, I mean, how can you be judgmental? I mean, I look at all the ahas that I had when I had the first iPad and started reading on the iPad and reading my RSS feed. And asking myself the question, why don't I have the same level of anxiety that I have when I'm reading RSS on my computer? And I realized, well, when I'm on my computer, there's all kinds of other stuff going on, a lot of visual noise, and I always feel like I should be working when I'm at my computer. And when I'm with the iPad, I can just focus on the reading. And it was sort of a paradigm shift for my brain. Mm. And the same sorts of things, experientially, that's one of the reasons why, for example, I'd love to get an Android phone so I could live with an Android phone for a while, because I just want to experience it rather than say, I don't like it because I've tried it for 8 seconds at a store. So,
I think you have to soak with it for a while before you can really speak authoritatively about it.
Yep, I agree. I absolutely agree.
The only thing with Google Glass is the masses aren't probably going to have this thing, or masses. I mean, normal people aren't going to really even have access to it or be able to afford it for quite a while. Isn't it just going to be the extreme early adopters that we have to trust and believe whatever they say?
They're supposed to ship a consumer grade version of this later in the year, like before Christmas. I think it'll be expensive. I think it'll be $1,000 or maybe $800 or $900, something like that. But maybe a year out, maybe it'll be $500, $400. And when it gets down to $200, $300 range, then it's, I think it is in that range.
Katie barred the door then, yeah.
Well, no, it's in a range of people that are interested to, it's a decision.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's within, right now it's this crazy expensive. So only developers and the independently wealthy can afford it.
Wow.
Will they be giving these out at Google I/O, which is next week, right?
I think that a lot of the people on the list will probably get theirs there, but they have to pay the $1,500. So last year they gave people an opportunity that were at I/O to buy it.
Okay.
And many developers did. So I assume that they're going to, probably give them their glass and, get them set up and all that stuff, but they'll still have to pay their $1,500.
Do you guys know anybody who's going to be at I/O yet? I think Robert Stevens was trying to get in again, but I don't know if he did. I talked to Doug Poli yesterday, who, they do a lot of work with Google for the enterprise.
Yes.
The firm he works for. And he was there last year, but he couldn't get in this year. There was such a mad dash for tickets.
Yeah.
That it was really a hard
They sold out very quickly.
Yeah. And then their system screwed up. And I know Robert Stevens tweeted that he had a ticket and then they took it away or something. It's like the system goofed up. And I never heard whether he got that straightened out and got in.
Interesting.
But we'll be reading all about that, I'm sure, soon.
He's resourceful enough to figure it out,
Yeah.
He'll get in.
Oh, yeah.
So, Tim, I got to tell you that this is hilarious. The case top.
Yeah, I just saw this last night, and I emailed myself from my tablet to put it in the notes. What's funny about this case top is, the guy is...
Explain what it is first.
Okay. So it's a Kickstarter project that basically turns your phone into a laptop. And if you watch the video, the guy is, he's a Canadian. He's very earnest. And, he goes through all this stuff and it actually looks pretty interesting as a product. But as I was watching it, I thought this is exactly like the Palm Folio that, was announced with great fanfare. Everyone, criticized it and it never came out. But what this has going for it is that it works with nearly every modern smartphone, Android. Wow. iOS, you name it. It's, it works with all of them. And it turns your smartphone that it uses for the, for the full brains of the system into a trackpad. So you're using your phone as a trackpad. You've got a full keyboard and you've got 11 inch screen. He claims that this stuff will work for like 10 years or something crazy like that.
Oh, geez.
Because the thing that wears out in a laptop before anything else is the CPU and the drives and all that kind of stuff. That's the part that gets outdated. But if that part is all done by your phone and you're upgrading your phone every once in a while.
Sure.
The screen and the keyboard, those things could last for a long time and there's not a lot of change in those things,
right,
So he does have a point from that perspective.
Well, so, I got to tell you that I have a Palm Folio.
You do?
I do. I have it because I had a buddy that worked for Palm and they shipped him about 15 of them.
Wow.
And he still has like 10 of them sitting in his, in a cabinet. But he says, here, take one. But of course you can't ever do anything with it except just keep it. And
I have a Trio 650 around here someplace, so I could actually use one.
Well, I got to tell you, it is the biggest piece of garbage I've ever used. Well, because he had a Trio 755, and we were goofing with it, and I just looked at him and I just said, who in their right mind would ever even consider shipping this thing, let alone actually making them? I mean, it was just horrible. And so this whole case top thing, I think this, you know, it's kind of an interesting concept, though, when you think about the fact that, you know, I've been looking at all the phablets, you know, the gigantic phones and thinking, you know, people, they desire bigger screen size, but not all the time. So, right. You know, would something like this, of course, then you have to carry it with you.
Yeah, but right. It's fairly compact. I mean, It looks like if you take your iPhone out and slide the thing back in, it's not much bigger than a iPad or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What is an 11-inch screen? Is that what we're looking at here?
Yeah, 11. It's like a MacBook Air 11. Yeah. It's like 11.5 or 11.6.
And it's got to be light. I mean, there can't be much weight to it.
No, it's very light. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no drive in there.
It's basically a screen and a keyboard, and that's it. Yeah. Oh, and a big battery. Okay. So the other interesting thing that I think that this has going for it is that it has an enormous battery that will apparently, it'll charge your phone while you're using it.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And I think the guy claims you get like 30 hours of that battery or something like that out of it.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's like some crazy long amount of battery life, and it charges your phone as you're using it. So I think you're the business guy, right? You're on the airplane. Instead of using your MacBook Air, you pull out this thing and you charge your half dead phone while you're on the flight using your laptop. Right?
There you go. Yeah.
While you're maybe doing emails.
Yeah. While you're actually using this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm going to definitely back this, even if it's just throwing in, you know, $3 to follow the progress. He set a high goal of 300K, and he's only at about a tenth of that 32.8 right now.
But only
he's
got one day.
29 days to go, right? Yeah. So that's assuming. Did it just go up yesterday? Some people do them longer than 30 days. I've never totally
went out on the second.
Okay, so it is brand new. Some people do like 45 days, but okay, so he's just launched this. Well, yeah, he'll probably do okay.
I like how he's got his stretch goals out here, and at 350,000, Bitcoins will be accepted.
Yeah.
At 500,000, everyone gets a 1080p screen. You know, it's like...
Oh, how funny. Well, I'll tell you what, it's there's no better way to see if your idea will fly than to put something out like this on Indiegogo or Kickstarter. Let the market tell you whether or not anybody cares.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. I think that's great.
You just have to put a lot of effort into that and that description, and it takes work, but it pays off for a lot of people.
Well, it was funny because I'm going to mention this story by a developer who shall remain nameless, who said that he and his buddies had a garage band when he was in high school. And they had one of his buddy's sisters, who was about a 14 on a scale of 1 to 10, he said, be the singer, even though she couldn't really sing. And he said, yeah, if we ever do this Kickstarter, because they're kicking around an idea for a Kickstarter project. So if we ever do the Kickstarter project, I'm going to see who has a great looking sister. I thought, how sexist are you? You know, but I'm waiting, you know, because there's a lot of geeks that hang out here to see what's new.
Oh, man.
But I think it's smart just to see what people are willing to put effort toward, what categories, and, you know, what are people making? So I think it's kind of cool.
Do you guys follow people on Kickstarter? I do. And I you know, immediately get notified when they backed something, you know.
I haven't really done that yet.
That's kind of fun because, you know, I go, oh, well, if he thinks that's worth looking at, I'm going to go look at it too, you know. And
that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
What else? What upcoming events are happening?
Well, let's see here. What do we got? Well, the thing today at COCO, I said the Step Up Achieve training program.
Yeah.
Goes till 4:30 today. So anyone out there that hears about this, head on down there and see what that's all about. And the rest of the stuff, I'll let you guys talk about. That's coming.
Yeah, I put in this one on the 25th, which is the Visualizing Neighborhoods Hackathon.
Yeah.
Which is a different hackathon than the one that comes the week after, which is the National Day of Civic Hacking. So it's similar kind of idea, though. So you trying to figure out, you know, new applications for all the data out there to improve, improve your local area.
I think this is a great idea.
Yeah.
So, well, you know what I find interesting is if you look at the sponsors for this hackathon, it includes Twilio.
No kidding.
The cloud communications platform.
Huh.
Well, and it's because what they're really gearing themselves toward is to be the communications conduit for developers. So if you want to send notifications, you want to send SMSs, whatever, everybody that I know is using Twilio.
Oh, yeah.
So
they're hot stuff. Yeah. So they're going to be part of the National Day of Civic Hacking or the other one?
Well, this is another one. So this is a more locally driven one, but it's the same idea where they bring all sorts of people together and they're trying to figure out what to do with big data. Right. So,
well, and what to ask for, you know, so there's that's the one thing that I find kind of interesting about, government 2.0 and some of the things that I watched, some of the videos I've watched and people I've talked with in the space that say that one of the keys to this is to discover and uncover what data we want. So what do we really want? And then go to local, regional, state level, or even federal level agencies and say, look, we need you to expose this database or these databases, or we need you to build an API so we can have access to this stuff. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah. So
a lot of hacking going on late this month and early next.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the I.O. festival coming up in early June as well.
Yeah. And I actually found a friend who's going to be at that. Donnie Burkholz, who's the analyst with Red Monk.
Yep.
Who's based here. And he actually apparently got a ticket to that. So we'll find out from him how it's going, since my press pass request still has not been answered.
Wow. But
I'm trying That's to get shocking. Over that.
Shocking,
I'm trying to get over it. It's been a long enough time now where I'm finally accepted. Realizing they're ignoring me.
Yeah, you're just not big enough to get one.
No, it's a big time event. I mean, I think it's 600-700 people, and they come from all over the country. But it is very much about design, not so much about tech. But read about it at eyeofestival.com.
And then when Phil gets back next week, we'll find out how it went at the big Victoria's Secret sale, because like Phil said, it's almost bikini season, so he's hot to use his coupons.
Well, and we'll figure out if he likes his HTC One.
Oh, yeah, seriously.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. He got it.
He have buyer's remorse?
Well, we shall see.
Well, and he could tell us how the event up in Fargo was last weekend, which I wasn't able to make, the Midwest Mobile Summit. He'll have some things to say about that, too.
Yeah. He did a nice post on that, by the way.
Oh, it's up. Okay, good.
Yeah,
good,
he did
good.
Get it up, so we'll good. No pun intended. Anyway, thanks, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for listening to
The Minivate Gang Podcast.
All right. Thanks.
Happy Cinco de Mayo tomorrow.
Yeah.